Mabuhay, or cheers to life in Filipino. You are listening to Hidden Apron Radio with me, Paulo Espanola, and this is episode 26. This show features the multifaceted stories of the people who live for our food, whether they be chefs, farmers, tech entrepreneurs, and everyone in between. We cover the mindsets of these people who often straddle very different worlds and defy labels, so there's a lot to learn here even if you're not a self-professed foodie. Our last episode, for example, explored how one company is using data analytics to help indoor farmers become more profitable. Check that episode and our show notes on hiddenapron.com/podcast. Okay, so it's been quite the whirlwind of a few weeks. I mean, when has it never been? Am I right? But especially for Filipino food and for us, the Hidden Apron team. Just a few nights ago, I had the opportunity to attend a regional Filipino food celebration, which featured chefs from all around the U.S. putting together a stunning menu at the James Beard House here in New York City. And this is something, regional Filipino food, I mean, that I have said is still missing in today's scene, so it was great to finally see that breakthrough. In related news, though nowhere near as grand, the Hidden Apron team and I once again headed to the kitchens and prepared a multi-course meal for private dinner at the Chelsea Market featuring our takes on regional Filipino food. It was personally significant as the menu was mostly plant-based and many of the crowd's favorites were actually the vegetarian, if not vegan dishes, which brings me to today's episode, vegan Filipino food. Okay, I know there's no way around it. Today's topic can be a bit touchy to some people. I understand that there's a lot to unpack with the V word, and I've seen conversations about it range from moralizing, purely economical, to downright bizarre. One thing's for sure, though, the words vegan and Filipino at first glance seem like they'd be about as good a match as unripe mango and shrimp paste. Then you realize, man, that shit's actually really good. Today, on the show, we have RG Enriquez, the creative mind and cook behind Astig Vegan, one of the coolest vegan Filipino resources online. Astig, by the way, is Filipino slang for kick-ass or cool, and RG definitely lives up to the name. A former newsroom correspondent, RG's road to a plant-based cuisine, which she's been on for 12 years and running now, was a surprising one, as there was no magic moment where she saw pictures of, I don't know, dying baby cows and swore at that moment off of meat forever. She actually describes it as a gradual shift in palate, and today she's helping many others taste the Filipino food they love, but made with plants, through her YouTube channel, blog, and live cooking demos. We talk about her transition to a vegan lifestyle and why it's actually given her more room to be creative with her cooking while exposing her to new flavors, her surprising sources of support and pushback, and some of her strategies for how to tell the story of your food, especially one for us that has so much cultural meaning to it that proposing a vegan version sometimes invites a pretty violent reaction. I myself have told people before that the reason I've never really gone vegan was because there's so much cultural ties to Filipino that I mistakenly attach to meat. And so this episode for me was quite eye-opening in how we should really view vegan Filipino food and vegan food in general. RG is passionate about keeping the Filipino soul in Filipino food, and her inviting and compassionate nature, embodied in her tagline, Kain na, let's eat, is why I think she's as successful and well-loved today. This one's for everyone who's ever wondered what it's like to transition into a plant-based lifestyle, but also for those looking to invite more people to their dining tables. So without further ado, RG Enriquez.
RG Enriquez, aka Astig Vegan, welcome to Hidden Apron Radio. And it's finally happening. I want to start usually with a origin story, but I figured that, you know, recently when I've been asking people on the podcast this one question, I find that everyone's so multifaceted, and this one question keeps recurring that I might as well make it permanent, and that is a definition of you, your introduction, basically, because whenever people think of the people on the podcast, there's that one title that everyone gets known by, like chef. But imagine you were going into a party And you had to, fill out those name tags that go like, "Hi, I'm RG. I'm a blank." What would you put in that blank?
Man, if I have to just shorten it, probably vegan Filipina.
And why would you choose that as your introduction?
Because those are the two things that I'm very passionate about. Anything has something to do with being Filipino. So not just with cooking, but in other aspects as well. I'm very, very into that. And also very, very much into vegan stuff as well, my vegan lifestyle. So those are my two passions. And not necessarily just vegan Filipino, but meaning all things vegan and all things Filipino.
Got you. Got you. So it's each of those two also have very distinct facets within themselves.
Exactly. Each one still has like a lot of diverse and interesting things that I am very passionate about.
Right. And I think that's one thing that I noticed when I did my preliminary let's call it research, because I used to call it Google stalking, and I'm like, you know what, you should really call it something a little nicer. When I was doing my preliminary research, I noticed that you've been doing more than just cooking. You've done journalism, you've done production, you were in marketing. I mean, you were a reporter or news correspondent for ABS, right? So if we're thinking about your background in food, where did it really begin? Even before the vegan lifestyle. Right. What were your earliest memories where you're like, "Well, wow, I really enjoy just food and being around it."
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it all came down. I think it started when I love being creative and I love sharing what I just created. So before going vegan, I love broadcasting, but to me, I didn't end up pursuing it because I was more into, because I was doing news, and that has to be straightforward. That cannot be like it has to be all facts, right? So I wanted to be more creative than just getting all the facts. But I really enjoyed the broadcasting part, and I really enjoyed being correspondent for ABS-CBN because it's about the Filipino community. So once again, I'm passionate about all things Filipino. So those are pretty much the highlights of why I did it. And then on the side, and even until now, I also volunteer in this community theater, and I also love performing on stage. And I realized, well, it has something to do with doing something creative and sharing it. And it just so happens that I do that with something that has something to do with being Filipino or being vegan.
I
So
see.
with the theater or the broadcasting, that's how I found my way to it. And then eventually, that's how I found my way to a stick vegan.
What were you did you find yourself seeing food as a creative outlet or a hobby while you were still doing broadcasting? Like it was almost like you got home and you're like, "My God, I had to stick to this script the whole day." And this was your release. Was food like that for you?
Well, actually, before that, before getting into food, I was really into theater. So that was theater for me. That was my creative outlet, before getting into food. So when I was doing being a freelance news correspondent, I was doing theater on the side. I wasn't cooking stick vegan full or like full on yet. So yeah, I don't think I was vegan. I wasn't vegan yet at that
I wonder then why you took the route you took then, because if there was already theater and you loved doing it, right, why did you turn left instead of right? Like, why did you go into food instead of perhaps pursuing like a career in acting?
Yeah, well, because I became vegan.
Ah, okay. So then
Vegan.
the next question then, and this was a question that I will admit I really wanted to try to avoid, because I feel like whenever this question gets asked to people who have chosen the vegan lifestyle, it comes off as very, very accusatory. You know what I mean? Like I did go vegetarian for like a good couple of months. And I remember when I told people that, they were like, but why? You know? So when I ask this question, I don't mean to make it sound like that, but like, so then why did you become vegan during this time of your life?
I have to point out that I was actually that person who would ask a vegan or even a vegetarian before, mm-hmm. but why? So I understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
It was, I had no intention of going vegan before. It really wasn't, I love food, but I wasn't much into, I wasn't dreaming about food before. Mm-hmm. And I took a nutrition class before, but it was like a mandatory class I had to take back then at Cal State Hayward, now East Bay.
As part of your major, or this was like a...
It's like one of those core, like a basic mandatory core. Like,
really? Wow, I wish they mandated that in my school.
Yeah, it was a prerequisite for some reason. Because I was a communications major.
Right.
I think I can choose which classes can be, but I'm trying to remember because it was a long time ago. But yeah, I had no intentions of going vegan. I took that class. It was far from being a vegan class. Mm-hmm. So I did not know any vegan materials at that time. And there was social media wasn't, you know, even like, there's no social media or whatever that can influence me. But I took that class, and that really made me super fascinated and interested about what's in the food, because that was exactly what the class was about. Not necessarily telling us to go plant-based, but just we have to study labels and, you know, serving sizes and all that. And that made me very fascinated about it.
Can you explain what about it fascinated you? Was it the science aspect, right? So when we talk about like the macronutrients, was it the public policy aspect of nutrition? What were the things about that class that really stood out to you?
Well, it was just more of an eye-opener because I had no care about food before. Mm-hmm. And simple, basic information I did not know that made me go like, what? Like, because when I used to not know how to read labels before about the serving sizes, and it was like, oh, like the serving size for the, you know, the amount of sugar or amount of fat is not so bad, or amount of saturated fat, and then
there's like three servings in that package.
It's like three pieces of the cereal, you know. Yeah. Oh, damn, that's funny, man. Like, and I have to multiply it in my head how much I just ate. It was fun for me. It was fun for me. I think the mechanics of learning, connecting the dots, what you put in your body mm-hmm. actually can change how you can do things and how you can even think. So, mm-hmm. you know, like there's a disconnect, like, oh, food, you know, good, delicious food makes you feel good. But that class explained, okay, carbohydrates, this is how it's going to affect how you will move, you know, or how you, your body, this is how, or, so different things that's in the food mm-hmm. and then how it can affect your body, how it will, break down,
right.
How it can develop. That was fascinating to me.
Were you at the time when you were, you know, studying this, were you already like experiencing the effects of different foods on your body, and you just never really had the language, so to speak, to talk about it? You know, it's almost like when we have this terminology, we're suddenly more aware of it. Like when I say like, oh, I just feel heavy, and you couldn't really explain it until you were given these terms and this framework to understand, oh my God, this is what food actually does to me.
Yes, I wasn't obese or anything. I wasn't heavy or anything, but yes, I would feel heavy or bloated or tired, and I just didn't know why. I thought it's just how I am, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily connecting me back to what I just put in my body, is what I just consumed.
Yeah, and I think I'm surprised to hear that this was a mandatory class. I'm like, wow, man, I wish they mandated that kind of stuff. That's like basic life information, and not, I don't know, trigonometry or something. So what happened next? So you found this new world, this new language of how food can affect us. where did it go from there? Because once that class is done, you could have just said like, all right, cool, that's done. I'm going to go back to my communication stuff. How deep did the rabbit hole then go?
Oh man, really deep. So it was very gradual though. So as I just wanted to eat more vegetables. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, it's super packed with these nutrients. Okay, I'll try it a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, I just started incorporating more and more plant-based dishes in my, you know, what I eat. And then eventually my palate changed because I was a huge meat eater. I was actually the biggest meat eater among my, I were four sisters and I was the, like, you know, just the one that is the unhealthiest.
What was like a typical day for you? Like a typical, you know, if you eat like three meals, what would you be eating?
So like, I just remember growing up, I love pork tocino and the oil, I would put it all over my rice. So it was almost a kind of like a greasy rice.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, it wasn't fried rice. It was greasy. It was just greasy.
I know what you mean. So for the listeners who don't know this concept of greasy rice, if you go into a restaurant in the Philippines, there's a specific one that serves, I'm not going to name it, but you're going to know if I describe it, that serves used to serve unlimited rice and a special like barbecue chicken. And on the table, there's your usual soy sauce, there's some vinegar, but there's another bottle that's orange colored and it's full of, it's literally, I kid you not, chicken grease that you can then top your rice with and make this greasy rice. So I just want to put that out there. So in case anyone was listening and think like, oh my God, this RG woman is just crazy. No, this is a thing. So yeah. Yeah, you would eat greasy rice, pork tocino. What else?
I love greasy rice. I love the fat like of the meat. I would prefer the fat more than the meat itself. So yeah, I would just eat that. It was all like just the tabak, which is the fat. So yeah, just all kinds of fatty stuff times three. And then for the day, mm-hmm. there's no vegetable. I don't remember eating. I remember my mom tried to trick me to eating carrots by convincing me that it was my favorite. But
like a psychological trick, like, no.
Psychological trick.
Remember this?
Remember, you love this. She really tried hard. But after, I never really liked vegetables. Mm-hmm. So lo and behold, I'm now the vegan one in the family. But
go back to then what you just mentioned. You said that your palate changed. What does that look like? Because I'm imagining someone who just woke up one day and you're like, you know what? I really like ampalaya all of a sudden, you know? How did that happen?
Well, I wasn't craving ampalaya, but I was craving mushrooms and eggplants mm-hmm. and basil. And I remember feeling weirded out by it because I never craved for them. You know, it was like, why would I crave for basil? But because back then, you know, my palate was so limited. But now I discovered, that's also one thing I loved about going vegan, was that I have discovered different flavors outside from what's, you know, what I was just like the greasy meat. So I have started craving for those. I have now learned, you know, like how to actually, like, maybe some vegetables that I didn't enjoy before just weren't properly cooked. So yes. When I tried cooking them and then I started enjoying their real flavors and juices, and I just started, and then in my head, like, suddenly it's all like the creative juice is flowing. It's like, oh, and then I started craving for these combinations, and suddenly I'm just excited about going to the grocery store, and I was never excited about going to the grocery store.
Right, because now you could go to more aisles than like the frozen pork tocino section.
Right, you know? And I didn't even want. I don't remember having to go because I would just either eat my mom's food or I would help her in the kitchen. But I don't remember having to always go to the grocery store. So, but now I just always look forward to going to one.
Got you. Is it then, one thing that I discovered when I've started to look into veganism, and I apprenticed for a vegan chef as well, is the variety of reasons why someone would go vegan, right? So when someone asks that question, like, why? The answers are actually very varied. You know, I used to think like, oh, it's always for a moral reason, You know, you have this image of like the bleeding heart, like liberal who's like, oh my God, but we shouldn't hurt animals. And that's a valid one. But I've also seen, like, for me, reducing meat for me has been an environmental issue. For you, if you had to boil it down then into one thing, is it health? Is it the creativity of being able to use vegetables? Like, what was that thing then that then convinced you that this was not just a palate change? This was something big. You know, this was something real now.
Yeah. So it eventually changed for the animals. So I was eating one day, lean. So back then I was just eating more vegetables, but that doesn't mean I was giving up turkey or chicken.
Sure.
And I was just eating, but I think it was that time it was beef. And I just didn't, something inside me just didn't enjoy it. And naturally, I don't usually share this story because I don't want to sound like, oh, it may sound weird. But at that time, I really just naturally didn't. I felt bad and repulsed that I was eating this thing for, you know, this flesh because I can just enjoy it. And it was something at that time I also felt weird about because I didn't know what to make out of it.
Or where it was coming from.
Yeah, because I didn't see any graphic videos or anything. I mean, I didn't read any vegan books. So it was just, and I didn't know anyone else that's vegan. So when I was eating it and I felt just repulsed and felt such remorse for doing that, so much guilt, I didn't know what to make of it. So I was still, and I didn't want to offend my mom because she always cooks for the family.
Right.
So that was a dilemma back then that I had. And I wasn't proud of it either because I was afraid of judgment. Like look at you, Miss, you know, self-righteous or whatever. I didn't want to broadcast it to the world or anything. But it was something interesting. It was natural for me to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. How did you go about resolving it then? Because that sounds like a difficult place to be. And it's quite common because I have other friends who... I always tell the story of this person I knew who his dad was way harsher on him for turning vegetarian, not even vegan, than for him coming out. Like when he came out, he was like, you know, like, yeah, sure, he was mad. He's like, oh my God, it's my only son. But when he turned vegetarian, he's like, oh my God, you know, like, what is your mom going to make for you? Don't you even think of that? Blah, blah, blah. So like, how did you go about resolving that dilemma?
Yeah, I even remembered. I think there's a Rex number at the joke. Have you heard of that? Where
I only know of it. The one that I remember the best from Rex Navarrete, who, by the way, for the listeners, is Filipino comedian. And I will put links in the show notes because this guy's hilarious. The only one I remember is the SBC Packers, which has nothing to do with food. So, no, I'm not familiar with whatever you're about to reference.
Yeah, but he was definitely referencing that. Like for Filipinos, it's worse for their kids to go vegetarian than to come out.
Yeah.
But I that was my fear that that they may not understand or they may think it's just a phase or a diet. But I underestimated them because it was actually my parents who said my dad kept. He saw me always picking up the meat and always just eating the rest in the pot. So I wasn't vegan then, but I was just avoiding it. And I was vegan outside of the house, but I would eat my mom's food minus the beef. Mm-hmm. But it was still cooked in the same pot. And he was just like, why don't you just go vegetarian? Like, what's the big deal? Like, if he, you know. And it was my mom who made sure that whatever I make, will be just like how she makes it. Will taste just like how she makes it, and that I felt like that made me closer to her because then we cooked together. Mm-hmm. Versus before, I would just wait for her to be done and then I'll eat the food. So
that's a fascinating take on it because I think the assumption is like when one turns vegan, you make the decision first before you make the lifestyle change. Where it almost sounds like in your case, you were already transitioning the lifestyle and the label was just a secondary, like, oh, well, right. I'm already avoiding the meat anyway, for reasons that I didn't understand at the time. Although one thing I wonder if this is just a theory or there's some truth behind this, but when you mentioned how your palate was limited to the greasy rice and meat, right? But, you know, when your palate started to expand, you couldn't just conveniently deny the repulsion anymore. Like, maybe it was there all along, but because your palate's limited, your body's just going to avoid, you know, it's like convenient denial, like, you know what I mean? But, right. I don't know, I'm not a psychoanalyst. I was just thinking about it a while ago. Like, why, what makes us have these emotions that we wouldn't have, like, where do they come from, right? It's a question I always ask myself. So, when you started to transition then, I think the misconception with vegetables is that they taste bad. Mm-hmm. Or that they have to, they need a lot of help before they taste good. Like, we got to batter it and fry it and whatnot. Were your first experiences in transitioning to a more plant-based diet one of, like, sheer willpower? Like, I will eat this spinach. Or were there already vegetables that you're like, man, I actually really like the taste of this?
Yeah. So, like what you said, it was more of, it was changing me versus me trying to change myself. So, mm-hmm. My vegan lifestyle was starting before I even know it. So that means that I was excited. I was looking forward to it. I didn't try to eat vegetables. I didn't make myself to, now I have to do this. Yeah. I have to give up meat. So, I think that's also the secret to how I've been vegan for quite a while, because I'm looking forward to it versus feeling like I have to. So at the time, I was already enjoying the flavors of the vegetables themselves, but that doesn't mean I'm shying away from frying either.
Yeah. What were there specific vegetables that you gravitated towards, or perhaps techniques, like whether it was quick stir fries or something? I'm trying to find basically where that question is going is for the people who have never even started that transition. Mm-hmm. Who do want to start eating vegetables, but there is no framework with which to identify it with. Like, at least for me, I could say, like, okay, you know, I don't like bitter flavors, but I know I like savory ones. Then I would start recommending, you know what, take some tomatoes and roast them. Take some mushrooms, like all the umami flavors. You know, is there something that you could suggest to folks who haven't even tried to transition in order to make it more, not palatable, but approachable?
Yeah, I am a huge fan of umami flavor. So I was exploring a lot of different kinds, even until now, different kinds of mushrooms, oyster mushroom, portobello mushroom, tofu as well. Tofu has a bad rep, but I think I was just eating crappy tofu before.
What defines good tofu, by the way? Because I am one of those people that, like, till today, it really takes a special cook to make me like, it's not that I dislike it, right? Mm-hmm. I do like it, but it's a really special chef who can transform tofu for me. What makes a good tofu?
For me, it doesn't have a first thing. It shouldn't have like that aftertaste. Sometimes, especially when I was growing up in the Philippines, the tohwa there had this kind of astringent aftertaste.
Yeah, that's what I associate tofu with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I didn't like that. I'm still not a fan of that. So I try to avoid those kind of tofu. Something that's just rich and sort of melts in your mouth, can be chewy as well. And it just doesn't have that beany, astringent aftertaste. It should be more like if it's soft, it should be custardy. If it's firm, I highly recommend this brand called Hoda Soy, and they're based.
How do you spell that? How do you spell Hoda Soy?
Yeah, Hodo.
Okay, I will put links to the show notes for those who are interested in
looking this up. And I think it's available now in the East Coast as well, and Costco as well, so I was happy about that. But yeah, they take their soybeans seriously. I went to their plant and I saw how they make it. And I think it's just really a matter of learning, just like anything with food, mm-hmm. necessarily vegan or not. You know, if you've been eating some kind of crappy quality of that ingredient, that doesn't mean that ingredient is crappy in general. It's just that
you got a crappy one. You got a crappy version of what it should have been, basically.
Right. Yeah.
For me, that ingredient would be tomato, because you know how like tomatoes for mass consumption, they're the ones that are like you put them in a truck and you gas them so that they grow faster and. But because they haven't really matured, they taste, there's this like bitter sourness to it.
Yeah.
But when I tasted a real, the especially the ugly looking tomato at the farmer's market, I was like, did you guys put sugar in this? And they're like, no, that's what do you mean? It's a tomato. I'm like, no, this is not a tomato. And they're like, oh, wait, were you buying your tomatoes at the grocery store? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, you see, that's not a tomato. That's not a tomato.
Perfect analogy for the tofu. But yes. Oh, man. Now I understand. I'm 100% the same thing with tomatoes. I now understand why it was considered a fruit, because it now the good ones taste fruit.
I was like, oh my god, this is what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be this sweet and and juicy. And it's like, okay, maybe our mistrust or our you know, our distaste for the vegetables were just because we've been given crappy vegetables, perhaps. I think so when we talk about ingredients then, right, and this is one way to approach a cuisine that sometimes gets labeled as a fad when really we have more abundant plants than we do animals. How about the technique side? Because I know you did take courses on cooking. How did you go about learning the techniques to be able to not only cook for yourself but for others? Was there a framework that you followed? Like, did you go like, okay, I'm going to master knife skills first and then this one, or did you say, I'm just gonna know how to cook this ingredient first?
So before, when I was just learning by myself, and also my mom was teaching, so it was sort of just learning on the go, but I had more structure when I took certain courses, and that really helped me, because it started with the grocery store, just learning what's available there, learning about your resources around you.
Ah, so it didn't even start in the kitchen yet. You actually started in the grocery store.
Exactly. The grocery store, farmer's market, basically learning about where can you get your ingredients. That's number one. And in fact, that's the number one question I always get from my website, stigvegan.com. Where can you get this? So the number one thing is to always educate yourself first. What are my resources? Mm-hmm. It's not hard to be vegan if you know where to go.
What makes it, do you feel like when people say it's hard to find ingredients to sustain a plant-based lifestyle, do you feel like that's just an excuse that they haven't looked around, or is there a valid...
It can be an excuse, but it can be not. I mean, really, sometimes maybe just hard for them for other reasons, but that could be one of the reasons. Maybe they just don't know their resources around them. So my number one recommendation is to research first and just have fun at the grocery store or have fun at the farmer's market. Pick something that you're not familiar with and then learn about how to make it. And you don't have to make it complicated. It can be a simple way of cooking it and get acquainted with it. You know, I think that's one thing too, is that people, especially now with these nice photos on Pinterest and social media, they get over ambitious, and then when it fails, it discourages them from
trying. Yeah, there was a great article. I read it many months ago, and I think it actually got retweeted a lot in Pinas. The title was In Defense of Ugly Food. You know, because a lot of the food that looks bad doesn't taste bad. And a lot of food that really looks beautiful. Right. I was just in this food conference and the guy was like, who wants to eat a freaking geode cake? Like, honestly, it looks beautiful, but like, it's just something you want to eat every day. And it's like the dark side of social media when everything looks so pretty. But it's like, it's not always that good. Okay, so you were talking about making sure you understand your resources. What else besides educating yourself on the resources, what else then did you start to learn?
Your resources, and then learning about your staples, what you should always have in the kitchen, and then learning about, and then eventually knife skills, and then eventually learning about steaming, roasting. So those are basic information and skills that I think everyone should have, whether they're a chef or not. It's very practical.
What would you say then to the argument, and, you know, a lot of new businesses are coming out. Like, for example, you hear of companies like Blue Apron that let you cook, but at least remove all the other stuff that people might not want to do, for better or for worse. And then there's companies like Soylent, which is like, you know, here, you don't even have to cook. All the nutrients. You basically view food as nutrients.
What is it?
It's a company called Soylent. It's from this movie called Soylent Green. Back in the day, it was like a horror movie or an action movie. But basically, they created this formula that's supposed to contain all the nutrients you'll ever need for the people who know they need food to be alive, but they don't view food the same way we do. Like, they view food as literally, it's just fuel. So, I mean, for me, I'm like, oh my God, but the romance of the food is half the fun, you know? So, when you say something like these are basic skills that you should know, how would you go about teaching that to someone who they do have a valid concern, right? Because, like, for example, in New York, I work 9 to 5. I'm tired when I get home. I don't have the time to learn these skills. What now?
Yeah, and I completely understand that as well because I do get very busy as well. But I think that going back to what I said before is don't overwhelm yourself. Meaning, you can learn a simple skill one step at a time. You don't have to learn about knife skills just one day. You can still find ways. Or you can explore just one simple ingredient, maybe just explore how to to cook eggplant or mushroom just that one night of the week. It doesn't have to be every day, although it will be nice. I think we have heard about people like Amy Bessa or Alice Waters, the slow food movement, the slow the savor. And then learn about slow cooking. And I think that's wonderful. And we should take time for that. But unfortunately, we cannot do that every day. But we can do it every once in a while. We can do it once a week, maybe on a Sunday. But with research now, with learning your resources, you can do that while you're on the bus, while or on public transport, it's just on your phone. And if people have time to peruse Facebook or Instagram, I think it's fine
Yeah, right.
to help your grocery stores.
Right. I think that's one thing that I still laugh at the irony of, because like my friend will be like, oh, I'm super 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 busy. I don't have time to do that. But I'm like, but dude, you just spent an hour watching NBA. Like, where exactly are you busy at? Thinking about what makes it easier, right? Because I think this whole conversation has been about how do you remove the artificial barriers between you and the lifestyle or the food that you want to eat. Whether it's because you've put up this artificial barrier of like, oh, all vegetables taste bad, right? Which we just talked about. Or, oh, I don't know where to find this stuff when literally it's just a Google search away. Or I don't know how to do this technique when really it's about you don't have to learn all techniques at once, which is everything you've just said right now. I think one thing that's helped me is what you were just saying about slow cooking on a Sunday of like prep work, right? So if you dice three cucumbers on a Sunday, those three cucumbers you don't have to dice throughout the week every day, right? You maybe you'll use one of the cucumbers for a salad on Monday. On Wednesday you might toss them in the stir fry, and it's like this idea that like your effort, I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but the effort and prep that you're doing on a Sunday will help save you all the other nights that you feel tired, that it might have taken you twice as long to prep on Monday night because you're extra tired, right?
Yeah, exactly. And also you can freeze stuff. The batch cooking just freeze some of the portion. And also now this I don't do, but I can understand if people I can suggest it to people if they are really pressed for time. Some vegetables are pre-cut, or some vegetables are already peeled at the grocery store. So they can offer that as well if that will cut them 15 minutes of their cooking. They can do that. I there's actually I think it was Island Pacific, which is a Filipino grocery store. I went there and they have the pinakdet.
Mix? I've seen those.
Oh, you have even in
Yes.
yeah.
No, I don't know, not in New York, but I've seen them. I think when I was in the Bay Area, actually, I was like, wow, this is so smart. Like, you know how they have the those like barbecue kits, like the American ones with like bell peppers and onions and the kebabs
Right.
already set up. I'm like, oh my God, why didn't we think of this? A pinakbet kit. Like I was like, oh, I wish I thought of that. What do you personally think about that though? Do you feel like that is a valid way to make it easier to cook? Getting prepackaged stuff at least is better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. So it's relatively better. But if you do have time to get to know your food, even better. So,
Gotcha.
yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you're pressed for time, you can, instead of chopping the squash, which could be tough, the kabocha squash,
Oh,
then you can,
yeah.
if, or it's good for the novice because some people, they want to go vegan and they come up to me and then, but they don't even know how to cook in general. So then they feel even more overwhelmed, right? So I just tell them, so that can be a good way for them first, for example, if they want to try the pinakbet, but it's just that they don't even know how to properly chop vegetables, for example, then they can do that. And then once they get more comfortable in the kitchen, then maybe they can graduate and move on to prepping the vegetables themselves. So as long as it's a stepping stone and not just a resort to shortcut everything and not get to know what you're making. Because then it's not sustainable. Because then after a while, you're just settling for things and you're not really, like you said, part of the, it's part of a romance. So getting to know your food. And I think if you're not happy with what you're doing, then it becomes a chore. And I think some people look at cooking as a chore because they don't enjoy it.
And that applies to a lot of other things, by the way, like working out, right? It's like if you
Right.
decide you're going to put every complicated exercise on your first week, maybe you'll get through it and then it's super painful and then you never go back. It's like maybe you should. It seems like the recurring theme through all this, when you're talking about learning about your resources or learning about certain techniques, is this progression. Like it's not like one day you're going to decide, I'm going to do this, and then it's like magically you wake up and that's it.
Yeah, and some people, well, I haven't met anyone personally, but I always hear stories from friends that they know someone vegan who stopped being vegan because they suddenly went super hungry or super sick or they don't know. And then it was because they overwhelmed themselves. They went out without really researching and then they felt discouraged. I'm like, okay, it's not for me.
Yeah, like it's a misplaced barrier, basically. It's something that maybe could have been prevented had they progressed instead.
Right,
Right?
right.
Going back to the idea of romance, because one of the things that makes you unique and why I think the Astig Vegan name is so apt is because, I mean, let's not lie, you picked the cuisine that is probably one of the hardest to not necessarily make vegan. I actually think it's one of the easiest to make vegan, but to make it approachable as vegan food, right? We just talked about how it's harder to become vegan than to come out in Pinas. And I remember like when I go home, like my cousins would actively refuse to serve me vegetables because it's like nakakahiya, right? It's like, oh no, come on, like you're our guest, we'll take you and get hamburgers. I'm like, no man, like just give me the freaking vegetables. Like what, how did you first approach that when you first started trying to fuse those two pieces of your life together, the Filipino side and the vegan side? Did you get a lot of pushback? Did you say, you know what, this is always the direction I want to take? Or how that first few cooking cycles look like?
I was afraid of pushback. I was anticipating it, but in the end, I pleasantly surprised that people were more receptive than I thought. And
Really?
yeah,
What?
of course I get pushback, but the congratulations was louder, and I was pleasantly surprised. That kept me going. But by the end of the day, I just really want to veganize the food that I missed growing up. So I didn't think of it like, okay, how can I now impress the Filipinos with, veganizing this? What's the complicated dish that I want to do to veganize? It was more like, well, dang it, like I miss pastel or I miss.
Ah, okay.
So how am I going to eat this? And then when I learned how to do it, I was like, oh my gosh, it's possible. I need to share the recipe, you know?
Okay. So it wasn't, it basically, you were not coming from a place of like, here's a moral argument for why we should be vegan. And since I'm Filipino, it's going to be a Filipino recipe. It was more like, dude, it's the flavor that I miss. I just happen to want it to be made of plants. I'm curious, did you ever get to veganize the greasy rice?
The greasy rice?
Yeah, with the pork tocino. Did you ever like make a vegan version?
No. Now I use my palate changed, so I wasn't
okay.
Greasy rice anymore. I love fried rice, but not swimming in oil anymore.
I was just curious if like somewhere out there someone was like, wow, I don't have to use this chicken fat on my rice anymore and I have this vegan version. I'm actually really surprised that you said people were receptive to it, because, and maybe that's my own misconceptions of or underestimating the Filipino sentiment towards, you know, plant-based cuisine.
I am underestimating it too. I mean, when I recently, like what we talked about before, when I went to the Philippines a week ago, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone in my family, they were respectful when we would go out. They will always keep telling to the servers, gulay lang ang gulay, just vegetables.
Yeah. But was it because, like, in Pinas, like, kilala ka na, you're like, oh, you're the vegan Pinay? Or was this legitimately them just saying, like, oh, you know, this is the way she eats?
Yeah, this is coming from my titas. So it's just they understand. Also, because I think they understand because I cook a lot, so that they are reassured that I'm taking care of myself versus I just want to look skinny or it's not a fad. When they know that I'm really serious about nurturing myself, they respect that. And then with other people, I went to this festival, and like I said, I underestimated it. Mm-hmm. More and more Filipinos are going vegan, and it was so strange to meet teenagers that are vegan. They tell me they've been vegan for about 2 to 3 years now.
Wow, 2 to 3 years. So this is not even like uso lang ngayon, right? You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, I saw this on Instagram, so I'm going to start doing it. But they've actually been vegan for 3 years.
Yeah, they've been vegan for 3 years, and then there was one couple. They're in their early 70s, and they just turned vegan.
At early 70s? Oh, was it health reasons? I'm curious.
Health reasons.
Got you.
And then there are also vegan babies at the festival. So it was mind-blowing to find out the more and more people are becoming vegan in the Philippines. So I underestimated it as well. But, I mean, of course, it's still a long way to go. It was still hard for me to navigate around the omnivore restaurants. Mm-hmm. But it's a growing community. So it wasn't much of... and also because maybe my approach has always been in a loving way when I share my recipes versus like, well, you should be vegan. Mm-hmm. Some people, that's their style, but it's not mine.
I think that's why I gravitated towards Daphne, the vegan chef I told you about, because her approach was exactly like that. It was like, I'm not trying to like hammer this over your head. You know, I'm going to make the food taste good. And that's really it. It just happens to be made of plants. You know, and she's even more soft-spoken than that. I probably used more words than she did. She probably just cooked her way into it. And I will say that because of your answer, I'm going to end up throwing a third of these questions out, because all of these were like defensive-based questions. Like, oh, how did you convince them of this part? So I'm like, huh, I'm going to have to switch it up.
You're listening to Hidden Apron Radio, produced by myself, Paolo Espanola, and Ricky Ho. Just two ordinary guys trying to break bread and break boundaries. Thoughts, musings, ever just wanted to rant at us? Do let us know at hiddenapron@gmail.com or @hidden_apron on both Twitter and Instagram. Back to the show.
So I do actually want to switch it up now that you bring up the Philippine trip, right? So I haven't been there for about a year, and I, for the listeners out there, the Philippines is going through rapid change, at least from a culinary standpoint. Give us like a state of the nation address. Like what's food culture like nowadays? I'm assuming you were mostly in Manila.
Yeah, Manila.
So what did you find when you? I mean, when's the last time you went before this one? Before this trip?
2013. So about 4 years.
Good. So it's been a good amount of time. There's been a good enough gap. Like compare and contrast what the food landscape looked then and now.
There's a lot more people who care about what's in their food, meaning not vegan or not. And I see more Filipino food restaurants now over there. You know, back then, the concept of Filipino food is more home cooking style.
Turuturo.
Turuturo.
Yeah.
Not so much going out and let's celebrate and then have Filipino food, at the restaurant. But now, there's at least one that kind of one fine dining Filipino restaurant where I would visit. And
which one is that, by the way?
Well, there's this one. There's this Crisostomo.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I saw that. But the other ones, I see them. I never really went inside. Mm-hmm. So I've never, I forgot the names, but yeah, one of them, Crisostomo. And also 4 years ago, I threw a vegan potluck for anyone, like just for anyone who's interested. Mm-hmm. And probably, 8 to 12 people there. And then this year I went to this vegan festival and it was hundreds of vegan Filipinos there. Of course it's a different event. It was mm-hmm. a festival, but I'm just amazed by how many more vegan Filipino friends that I've met from this trip versus before. And then also some people are just really more into artisanal local stuff as well. And also even zero waste, which is really cool.
It's funny because a lot of these concepts that we're talking about now, like caring about what goes in your food or I know we haven't used this term, but in the States, obviously, this is a big thing, local food movement, right? So local food or veganism or zero waste, like a lot of the stuff is the stuff that our ancestors used to do without even questioning. So I wonder, like, what happened? Did we take a detour and now we're just going back to where we were originally?
I mean, we're working more. That's probably what happened. We had less time. We had less time in our schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe that's what it was. And then just the whole industrialization of things. Right. That's my,
Yeah, yeah. And, when I think one of the things that we, or at least me and I'm sure because of your background, you'd appreciate the importance of it is the story around what you're trying to do then, right? Because the logical argument, I think that works for some people, saying, hey, you should go vegan because it's cheaper, it's easier to cook, you have less risk of health, adverse health effects, whatever, whatever. Some people that works. Some people it's the moral argument. But when you're trying to craft a story around vegan cuisine, especially vegan Filipino cuisine, what are some of the strategies that you found work for you?
It depends who am I talking to. So for the older generation, actually the biggest pushback that I get are not from the older generation and not from the young ones, not from the millennials, but from the middle-aged Filipinos.
Really?
Yeah.
Again, this is unexpected to me. I'm pretty sure I've at least read up a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Because the older generation, meaning older meaning like 60s and older,
like our lolos and lolas, basically.
Yeah. Whenever they see me make something that's vegan, mm-hmm. they were relieved that they can. Oh, pwede sa akin yan. Meaning I can have that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Filipino food is not prescribed by the doctors.
Yeah.
It's so healthy for you, diabetes.
It's not like the Mediterranean diet.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunately killing them. So when they see that there's a way for them to keep eating what they are, you know, what they grew up eating, to continue that tradition. Mm. They were more relieved. And then they're like, and then I love it when they joke that, you know, I can do that. Like you can eat. They sometimes will tell me even more about how to properly do it. But I love that because they're embracing it. They're making it their own. So the lolos and lolas are relieved and then they make it their own. And then the younger ones, the teenager in the 20s, they understand the trend of, you know, of going local, going organic, going vegan, mm-hmm. zero waste. So they're completely open-minded to it. The middle age foodies, you know, they're not experiencing any health problems that around this age.
Right, so there's no incentive for the health side.
Yeah, and then they love their meat, so they just don't get it. But and this is just in general. There are also some middle age who are open minded as well. For example, here in the Bay Area, we have this strong movement called the Filipino Food Movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're super supportive of vegan Filipino as well. So, yeah, like I said, I think I underestimated Filipinos, mm-hmm. but there's less pushback than I thought.
Got you. Yeah, see, this was one of those questions that I told you I would have to end up reframing, because when we think about and I would cook, and there's certain messages that I want to get across. Like, for example, reduce your meat intake. I always came at it like, I'm going to get a ton of pushback. So I'm going to, you know, I'm not even going to mention it. Like, I would do a dinner where I would tell the chefs, like, we're only serving 4 ounces of meat over all the courses total. And we're not going to say it. We're not going to tell anyone. We're only going to tell it at the very end. As a strategy, so that when people say like, oh my God, this was like an amazing meal, then we go, oh, by the way, there's only 4 ounces of meat. And they're like, what, really? So that, you know, but maybe that's because I was like you said, I was so not scared, but I was like, there's going to be a ton of pushback. And this is my strategy of dealing with it. Whereas with you, it sounds like you didn't even have to do that because there was actually a lot more acceptance.
Yeah, but you're right. You know, I think that's a great, strategy. There is pushback for sure. I can't please everyone, and of course, the notion of vegan Filipino is for some people is very contradictory. And for example, one pushback was my friend wanted to try the vegan kare-kare, so she asked me if I can make it for her family, and they enjoyed it. And then the husband found out there's no meat, and he told the family, and suddenly they're looking for the meat.
Because there's like there's already prejudice before they even ate it.
Yeah, and then when they found out there's no meat, and they're like, "Say no meat," and then suddenly they're complaining. But before that, they weren't complaining. So, like you said, what you were anticipating during your pop up, it could happen just like that. With that example, or somebody would say from. A friend of a friend reposted on social media on Instagram a party I threw. I cooked for my friends. Mm-hmm. One stranger, commented on her photo, and she said, "Oh, our ancestors will get so, you know, like
they'll be rolling in the grave."
Exactly. That's the term she used. So, and then my friend got so protective of me.
Yeah.
He just went on it, and I felt so bad. But, you know, I mean, I got to choose my battles. Like, I can't really just focus on these people that are not receptive to what I make and be more, focus more on the positives, because as long as they're more, it's not like I don't listen to feedback. Of course, I will listen to feedback. It's just that if I have to look at the ratio. If more people are fine with it, then I think it's a good sign.
Right, right. It's like the net effect, basically. I almost wonder what would have happened if they had tasted the food before the mind got in the way. Right? Like if they ate the kare-kare before they knew there was no meat. You know, I wonder what would have happened, how that conversation would have turned out.
No, I mean, they did So my friend told me they were eating it and they were enjoying it already.
Ah, and then it was like, oh, walang meat. And then
they got mad.
Is this why? When I was looking through your site, you know, you talk about having a plant-based cuisine without losing the soul of Filipino food. Is that why you explicitly state that?
Yes. Well, I think.
Or is that more because you are passionate about Filipino and you want to explicitly call it out that, you know, this is a Filipino, this is a vegan Filipino?
Yeah, I think where it's coming from is because I don't want people to think that it's just an appropriation, that it's vegan, but there's no, like, I didn't take account how it was made traditionally before. Mm-hmm. So meaning it was done in a respectful way. I understood the original way of cooking it, and I meant no disrespect to my elders.
Got you.
Meaning it's exactly how my elders made the dish, but I learned just how to substitute the meat part. So it will taste just like how I remembered growing up, and hopefully how for some people in the Philippines, how they remembered it as well. So it was more of that versus like completely changing.
Got you. Right. Where it's not like a, what's the term? It's not a bastardization for the sake of a trend, basically.
Exactly. Right. That's why I coined that losing its soul.
Yeah. What is your, and obviously there's no right answer to this because every Filipino who have gotten on the show has different meanings for the soul of Filipino food, right? Amy Bessa talks about ingredients and the terroir. Others have talked about the concept of family. Others talk about, you know, the technique in itself. But for you, what is the soul of Filipino food?
Oh, yeah. I think it's all of the above. So the ingredients, definitely, and family as well. And to me, it's subjective. Personally, if it makes you feel like home.
Mm.
Yeah, to me, with, you know, it reminds me of home in the Philippines. So to me, that's what makes it authentic for me. But that's just personal.
Right. No, and that's exactly why I prefaced the question with saying like, there's no right answer, right? Because there is no one definition for it. And you know, your idea that it should feel like home, I think I took that for granted. I thought like, oh man, that's just what food is. But then I realized like other cuisines don't give me that feeling, and that's not how people have defined that cuisine when I ask them and talk to them about it. But this idea that like it is a cuisine that grew out of our homes, not mm-hmm. in some, you know, I've used the example of like the royal Chinese court, right? We didn't have a royalty that defined what the cuisine mm-hmm. was going to be. It's something that I took for granted is the aspect of, you know, lutong bahay for Filipino food.
Yeah.
Pivoting, and maybe we should have done this in the beginning because your background before food was actually in journalism and broadcasting. What have you found today to be the most effective, not platforms, because we could go into a whole argument of Facebook versus Instagram versus Snapchat, whatever, mm-hmm. but what are the storytelling methods that you found the most effective when talking about what you do?
YouTube for me. What you're asking?
Yes.
The platform?
It doesn't have to be platform, but you know, I guess in YouTube's case, it's video production, right?
My video production, it's very visual. Mm-hmm. I think with cooking, it has to be visual. I tried. I also type up recipes on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure, just because some people may still prefer, you know, the traditional way of reading the recipes, which is fine. So I personally, I think the most user-friendly is the video part.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that and to me as well, I think I'm just really passionate about making sure that it translates to different platforms as well. So on the website, I try at least to take nice looking photos of the food. So beautiful photos is important, and also very easy to read it and, you know, well-written recipes. So that's also another aspect. And then there's the video, because some people may rather see how it was done versus imagining it. So those three things. But ultimately, of course, if you have a good recipe to start with, then that's the most important, is to make sure that it's people can replicate what you just did, if you're sharing the recipe.
Of course.
And then just the beautifying it is just the later part, making sure it looks appealing. Mm-hmm. But the first part is to make sure that people can replicate it. So I made a mistake before of just, when I was just starting, to just put it out there. You know, I wasn't really...
When you say put it out there, you mean like just like a blog post and no video, no nothing?
Yeah, it was just a blog post, and then the ingredients are not even that specified. I mean, it was just really loose recipes, because I didn't grow up reading cookbooks. It wasn't until I became vegan that I got passionate about cooking. I was helping my... I did have some knowledge about Filipino cooking, but I wasn't in love with it until I became vegan. So with the also cookbooks, it wasn't around when I they weren't around when I was growing up. So I have to step back and sort of, okay, how do I make sure that people can, you know, can actually do this in their kitchen? So yeah, make sure that the recipes are solid, and then they can try it at home. And then the next is just beautifying.
Got you. And so the thing is, that practice in itself, the beautifying, so taking, I know we make it sound like, okay, that's just step two and three that you add on to making the recipe. Shoot a beautiful photo and compose a great video. They're a lot harder said than done. Because I myself have, you know, even doing this podcast, people think, oh, you just press record, right? I'm like, no, there's the sound editing, there's the tagging, there's mm-hmm. there's finding a website to host it. What are the, if you had to pick 80-20 rule, so, you know, the 20% of the activities when crafting that story that result in 80% of the work, what are those activities?
Well, I wonder for you, what is it for you, for your podcast?
You know what it is? It's the research. It makes it so much easier, is the research, because if the research was done right, the conversation flows a lot easier. Writing the show notes then becomes easier. So finding the links to put it in. And mm-hmm. it's like, I could get one done within a week. And start to end. But if I didn't do my research, I have to figure out, I have to then spend an extra double the time writing to try to make it coherent. Right? Because I didn't do my research. I have to somehow tie it together after the fact rather than if I just did the research prior. So in the same sense, when you are about to shoot these videos, when you are then linking them to the recipes and finding out how else to get the story across, what are those 20% activities that constitute actually like 80% of your success?
Oh, preparation is the key. So just like yours, pre-production. I even learned this back in college. For video production, there's pre-production, mm-hmm. there's production, and there's post-production.
Gotcha.
The most important and takes the most time, pre-production.
What's involved in pre-production, by the way?
Pre-production, like what you said with yours, is research. Getting your list. So, for example, if it's for your video production, and this is the traditional sense, and people don't follow this anymore. They just use an iPhone. But, mm-hmm. you know, like you have an equipment list, you have ingredients list, because that will save your butt eventually. Because if you forgot something, that will take more time if you have to go back.
And fix it, right.
And then, so with the recipes, before posting, this is why I take forever posting recipes. Mm-hmm. I cannot do the whole weekly thing. I tried it like every Tuesday, you know, like the other bloggers do. I cannot, because I have to be sent, I have to take my time with this. I actually ask some recipe testers to test the recipes first and then see if they have any feedback. So I have two people at least try the recipes. And then they They try it, they give their feedback. And then I also have one person to proofread what I had wrote, what I had written down on the website, and just another, you know, pair of eyes. And because aside from that, the whole beautifying thing is just, that's just like sort of just all fun for me because, oh yeah, it comes really easy because I can just, but it still work, but the whole preparation, that's the most, that's where the hard work comes from. And to make sure that it will be evergreen recipe. Cause I, even until now, the kare-kare recipe, the sisig recipe, I would say it's at least 3 years old, 2-3 years old. Mm-hmm. And people still use it. So, and hopefully people will still use it even 10 years from now. So if it will be an evergreen recipe, I have to take my time with it.
Right. And then
the whole beautification, that will come last. Like it's not as important compared to, if it's not going to taste good, nobody cares if it's the best looking photo.
I think I want to make sure I emphasize that piece because that's a mistake I made. So when people listen to this, I think the natural mistake we make as beginners is to research, oh, what lighting equipment should I get? Or, oh, what website server should I buy? Is it WordPress or Squarespace? Which one looks nicer? When, like, that's really should be the last of your consideration, right? It's like, make sure the food freaking tastes good first and then worry about that. So I want to make sure listeners hear that a second time coming from me because I definitely didn't do what you did. I started with the aesthetics and the technicalities before the fundamental bit that at the end of the day we're eating.
That was my mistake too.
Ah, well, you know what? If you didn't say anything, you know, I would have believed it. I think what I'm getting out of this then is no matter what platform of storytelling you choose, like for me, it's audio. For you, it's video. For someone else, it might be writing, is identifying what activities constitute as the pre-production and getting good at that piece because that's going to result in the 80% of your success, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's very fair to say. That's well put.
Perfect. See, I'm making sure, like, my mom used to, like, when we were growing up, always called me pilosopo. And it takes me a concerted effort to be like, make sure people who are listening to this get some tactical advice, not just the philosophies of thinking about these things, right?
Like, I mean, if you didn't research prior to going to the interview, it doesn't matter, let's say, how, you know, like the quality of the audio, if, you know, or which website it is. But if there's no connection while you guys are talking, then people will find it hard to listen to.
Right. Before I close out with a section that it's basically a group of questions that I ask every guest on the show, is there something that you wish I had asked? You know, was there something where you were like, you know what? He totally missed this one piece that's important to the work I do. Was there one thing I missed?
Not really. I think, I can just start, you know, promoting, you know, if people are interested, they can go on the website. But I think I really enjoyed this conversation. It's not so much just talking about all vegan or all Filipino. It was more of a little bit of everything. So that was nice.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise then I could have just picked any vegan chef, or if it was Filipino, I could pick any Filipino person, but we have Astig Vegan, right? We might as well cover both bases.
Oh, you know what I do miss? Okay. I have to point out, I want to share when I went to the Philippines, man, it's just, I really just remembered that it's a shame that, you know, people don't take advantage of what's around them. When I got there, I ate all the chicos and the mangoes and the,
You know how expensive it is here?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's just frustrating.
Turmeric? Okay. It was $15 a pound here at the farmer's market in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. But over there in the Philippines, they're growing out of, it's just in streets. Like people are just, they have it in their backyard, front yard. Nobody's, I mean, people, granted, Filipinos also prize it, just like malunggay as a superfood now. It's not like they're being ignored, but I'm just in awe of like the huge price difference and how I just wish I can bring them with me here.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Actually, you're right. That's often, see, even I forgot to point that out. And so I'm really glad that you called it out, that we forgot to talk about that. It's something that, are you familiar with pako, like fiddlehead ferns?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's pako in Tagalog, but I know in Ilonggo or Bisaya, that's what we call it. But like for a little like quart here in New York, I think they were pricing it at like $12, $13. Wow. And it grows in like the mountains, or not the mountains, but the hills near my parents' farm. And they were like, you could eat that? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, what do you mean? It's just like it's weeds. I'm like, you have no idea how much I'm willing to pay for that stuff.
So your family, they don't even want to eat it?
It's not that they don't want to eat it, but again, when you, going back to your what you said earlier about just even knowing what your resources are, right? Yeah. They didn't know you can.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why one of the people I actually got in the podcast here, my mentor, when she's like, the next time you come to the Visayas, you should come to Capiz with the schools that we work with and teach the chefs, because they're sitting in a gold mine of ingredients, and they're the ones who are like, all we know how to cook is Maggi chicken noodles with or like pancit bihon. And I'm like, oh my God, it's all around you. And they're like, oh, we didn't know you could use that.
Exactly. And it's, you know, people rely so much in the Philippines on processed food, processed products. Like you said, the Maggi seasoning or the magic setup.
Magic setup. No, that was the one. I was like, wait, what's the one that triggers me the most?
There's so much vegetation as well. I heard that it has Philippines has the most vegetation in Asia, yet we consume the least in Asia. Yeah. And that's so ironic. That's one thing that I love about going vegan. People think it's restricting and limiting, but that opened so many doors for me as far as cooking wise, as far as how many more ingredients I can explore. I have been vegan for I didn't really count. I didn't really know when I started vegan, but I think more or less 12 years now. And I still barely scratched the surface. There are so many ingredients out there. I still have to explore so many different types of vegetables.
Right, right. And I think it's people like you who raise the awareness, because I think it was Amy Bessel who said it. Like, if we're not going to cook it, it will die out. We actually need to be cooking it in order for it to survive, which is kind of counterintuitive, but it's like, if we start harvesting it, won't we run out? And it's like, no, because if you enjoy the flavor and you want to keep it alive, you will work to protect the environment that raises it. Yeah. And I think that's why her advocacy for local Pinoy ingredients is so strong, is because she's like, this stuff is going to die out if we don't cook it and feature it and begin to love the food.
Yes, right? Yes, I wholeheartedly agree.
You just tacked on an extra 15 minutes to your interview. See? You're like, man, how long has it been? I'm like, I'm telling you, I can keep this going. But I want to close out with, it's just a list of questions that I've asked everyone in the show, and they're really quick. However, you can answer them as short or as long as you want. Cool?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. First question. Person who most influenced you from a cooking standpoint?
My mom.
Why is that?
She was a full-time homemaker for at least 15 years. If she doesn't cook three times a day, she cooks at least every day. And she has influenced me, even, especially now that I'm vegan, how to keep the essence of and celebrate Filipino food. So it's through her and her advice and her wisdom. So I owe it to her.
Best cooking tool you've ever purchased? And you cannot say the knife.
Oh, that was
good. See, I knew it. There's always, because half the people will always go like, oh, my knife. And I'm like, no, that's a cop out. I'm going to take it away from you. So, sorry, I'm taking away the knife.
My cast iron pan.
How long have you had this cast iron pan?
I would say 4 years now.
Oh, so it's still young. It's a relatively young.
I got it, my vegan chef friend, I got it from him. So he's been cooking on it. So it's been nicely seasoned already.
he gave you a cast iron pan that
I bought it from him. Sorry.
I'm like, wow, that's like, man, that's like cutting off your left. I mean, no, I hate to be dramatic, but I'm half Filipino, so that's my excuse. You know, madrama tayo, diba? So if you could get everyone in the world to read this one book or watch this one basically one resource, what would it be? And it doesn't have to be about food, right? It could just be like, you know, like, this will make us all a better species. What would that resource be?
I would say there's this documentary called Earthlings. So it's hard to watch, but it was really eye-opening for me when I saw it.
I will link it in the show notes and have people judge for themselves.
If they have
three ingredients to describe you.
Coconut sugar.
Okay.
Peely nuts.
Peely nuts. Okay.
And lungaw. Is that, ingredients or a dish?
Ingredients. So lungaw works.
Okay.
But a specific, any kind of specific one?
No, just lungaw.
Ah, okay. Okay, I heard langaw, which is like Bisaya for vinegar. So I was like, whoa.
I'm sorry.
I was like, wow, she speaks Bisaya? Like,
No. So let me change it because that's a dish. So I would say, I'm going to say salt, Filipino salt.
Like the rock salt or the sea salt?
Yeah.
Ah, rock salt. Okay.
Rock salt.
Man, that stuff was magical to me growing up. I was so amazed by it, but I'm glad you said. So salt, coconut sugar, and peely nuts. Sounds like the start of a good ice cream, but maybe I'm just...
Oh, that sounds good.
Maybe I'm just hungry. Okay, last question. If you had to take all of RG's work, life, vision, and distill it into one line, maybe the title of a new book or the start of a documentary, what would that one line read? If it was, this is you, what would that one line be?
Can you elaborate? What do you mean?
But basically, if everyone were to reduce you to one line, like, you know, when we pass from this earth and people were like, this is the one line that they lived by. This is the one message. If they could only speak one sentence in their life of the message that they would like the world to know, what would that one line be?
Kain na, let's eat.
Ah, so... Why that, by the way? I'm curious because I know reading your post that you always end with that. Why that?
Because it's a loving way of how Filipinos show their compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and to me, like I said, when it boils down to two words for me, it's vegan Filipino, and vegan means compassion, and Filipino means, you know, I'm Filipino, I'm passionate about it. So, kain na, let's eat is a It's a loving way of showing your compassion as a Filipino. And I understand some people go with kumain ka na ba or but to me, I like it more. It's more inviting.
Yeah. I, for listeners who aren't familiar with the Filipino culture, kain na, even though it literally means let's eat, it's more than just an invitation to eat, because oftentimes, like when I go home, people will say it even though they know you might have already eaten. Like, it's like literally you walk in the door and if people are eating, they will say kain tayo or kain na, or, you know, in Bisaya.
Yeah, even if you don't have anything prepared yet.
Yeah, exactly. So I just want to make sure people understood that this is more than just saying let's eat. There really is, you know, this element of compassion and love that goes behind those words. I love it. See, that's what I meant by the one line. If it was all down to, if this was the last line, you could say that you were like, man, the world needs to hear this. Kind of, let's eat.
Yes.
I get it. Okay. Actually, I lied. There is one last question, but this is more logistics. Where can people follow your story? So Instagram, website, this is it. This is the time you list them all out.
Oh, gotcha. So it's easy. It's Astig Vegan. Astig means, it spells A-S-T-I-G, vegan. So one word, astigvegan.com. Astig means, by the way, it's a Tagalog for kick-ass or tough. Basically, I just chose it to sound fun. But yeah, it's astigvegan.com. Also on social media, you can find under astigvegan and on Twitter and Facebook.
So you said Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. It's all astigvegan.
Yes. So on YouTube, and you can just do a YouTube search, vegan Filipino, mm-hmm. and I'll be one of the results.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, because I made the mistake of separating. I have two channels on YouTube, and the one that I have been uploading is RCE Studios. It's youtube.com/RCE Studios. So those are my initials, RCE, mm-hmm. and then Studios. So it's youtube.com/RCE Studios. So it's not a Stig Vegan, but if they get confused, they can just do a search.
Yeah.
Words and then I'll pop up.
I'll link it in the show notes because I definitely found your older reporter newsreels. I'm like, ha, I have ammo.
That one.
I was like, yes, I found it. This is the magic of the internets. Yeah, well, okay. Thank you for generously giving me your time. I have been notorious of taking it from people, especially if you give me a plate of food and a good drink to go with it. So be glad that this is not in person, because we would be lasting. We will be lasting till God knows when if this was in person. But thank you again for the time. I hope we can actually cook together, because the last time I was in San Francisco, we barely missed each other.
Well, thank you as well. You know, this is my first podcast ever, so I'm so glad that
you sounded like a natural. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know where this. Oh my god, this is my first.
Yeah, I was so scared coming like prior. I was like, I hope I don't make a fool out of myself. But no, yeah,
you did wonderfully.
Oh, thank you.
All right, RG, thank you, and we will talk soon.
Okay, talk soon. Thanks again. Bye.